It's me again, Hank the cow dog. When I heard the noise, I knew we had serious problems. I'll admit that I didn't know the cause right away, and I never suspected that it might have been caused by an enemy agent named Mysterious Esther. Nor did I have any suspicions that before the night was over, I would be attacked by a vampire vacuum sweeper. All I knew was that we had us a wild stampede down at the weaning pen, and I had to stop it before the calves tore down the fence and scattered into four counties. It was in November, as I recall. Yes, because that's when we rounded up all the cattle, separated the calves from their mothers, and weaned them. The calves, that is. We weaned the calves. We don't wean the mothers because they're already weaned. We wean the calves off their mama's milk, don't you see? Because it's time for them to get out and hustle their own grub like the rest of us. We put them together in a bunch and feed them alfalfa hay and store-bought feed for a couple of weeks. No problem there. The problem is that they are little dummies, afraid of every little noise and shadow, and once they start running, they'll flatten fences and scatter like quail. It's called a stampede. And that's what we had cooking. I knew it just as soon as I heard the rumble of their hooves. We were down at Slim's place, don't you see, on the front porch. We were guarding the porch and wood pile. Or to be perfectly accurate about it and to call a spade a shovel, I was guarding the wood pile while my assistant was in the process of sleeping his life away. I was standing guard, see? Why? Well, we'd gotten some secret information that there was a thief in the neighborhood. Some nut who went creeping around ranches and stealing their wood piles and porches. It's true. Several whole entire porches had been stolen. And I guess you know where I stand on the issue of porch thieving. I don't allow it. By George, if a guy wants to steal a porch, he'd better go to the next ranch. If he tries it here, he has to deal with the head of ranch security. Anyways, that's what I was doing down at Slim's place. And when I heard the rumble of hooves, I came flying out of a deep state of concentration and thought about the problem of porch theft. My ears sprang to the alert position. Grover, the pork chops are cascading across the honking sassafras. Mr. Knapp in the afternoon leaped to his feet and began squeaking.
Who? Where are they? How many do you see?
They came out of the wood pile and they're trying to steal our porch. He shook the vapors out of his head and stared at me.
Oh, hi, Hank. Gosh, I must have been asleep and I dreamed that a honking pork chop was trying to steal our porch.
I raised up and blinked my eyes. There was Drover, giving me his usual empty stare. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think you said...
Never mind what I said. I was lost in thought, Drover, deepest thought. And you interrupted my deepest pork chops with your... Suddenly I heard the rumble of hooves down at the weaning trap. Holy smokes, Drover, the calves are running. We got to warn Slim. Where is he?
Well, let's see here. Before we went to sleep, I saw him walking down to the hay barn.
Yes. Hay, barn, walking. It all fits the pattern. Go on.
Well, he said he was going down there to see Esther.
I stared into his eyes. He had two of them. See Esther? Who is Esther? Out with it, Drover. We haven't a moment to spare.
Well, I'm not sure, but that's what he said, that he was going down to the hay barn to see Esther.
Very strange. Okay, partner, stand by for a rapid sprint to the hay barn. We got to warn Slim about the stampede. Come on, let's go. And with that, we went to full flames on all engines and went streaking to the hay barn, which, by the way, wasn't much of a barn. It was a small shed made of weathered lumber and with a tin roof on the top, of course. That's where you'd expect to find a roof, right? I noticed these tiny details. I was the first to arrive. Grover limped and lollygagged behind me, and I had to wait for him. This gave me a few precious moments to analyze the situation. It was clear by this time that the mysterious Esther had somehow spooked our cattle and caused them to stampede. At this point, we didn't know how or why, but I was pretty sure that she was our prime suspect in the case, and Slim had to be warned. At last, Drover arrived, huffing and puffing. I greeted him with stern eyes. "Well, I'm glad you could join us, Drover. I hope this isn't interfering with your social schedule. Now listen carefully. We're going in. I'll go first. You cover the rear."
"Whose rear? Yours or mine?"
"Our rear, Drover. We have only one rear."
"No, we got two. And mine's the one with the stubbed tail. And it's the one I sit on all the time."
I glared at the runt. "Are you trying to be funny?"
"I don't think so."
"Good. You're not. When I say our rear, I mean our collective rear, the area behind us."
"Yeah, but what if we're facing the other direction?"
"Everything changes, Drover. In the blink of an eye, the front can become the rear, and the rear can become the front. We have to prepare for any contingency."
"Oh, okay. So, we're not supposed to blink our eyes?"
Sometimes when I talk to Drover... Oh, well. We had work to do. "Never mind. We're going in. And you'd better cover the rear."
"Well, all right, but I still don't understand."
I didn't wait around to hear the rest. I crept up to the door, peered inside. It was dark. And then went charging in, barking in all directions. I was a little surprised that mysterious Esther was nowhere in sight. I was even more surprised, shocked. Actually, when I saw Slim sprawled out on a layer of hay. "Cover the door, Drover. We've got a man down."
"Yeah, I guess he took a nap."
"Are you nuts? He's unconscious. Mysterious Esther is obviously a spy. She clubbed Slim from behind, and now she's out there stampeding our cattle. Don't you see how it all fits together?"
"Not really. And you know what else?"
"Is it important, Drover? We've got a man down and an enemy spy running loose on the ranch. This isn't a great time to be making small talk."
"Yeah, but I just figured it out."
I studied him with narrowed eyes. "You figured it out? Drover, you don't need to figure it out because I figured it out long ago. Don't forget who's in charge here." He gave me a silly grin.
"Yeah, but I just figured out what Slim said. He didn't say he was going to see Esther. He said he was going to take a siesta, only he called it a siesta. And that's why he's asleep. Pretty neat, huh?"
I held him in my glare for a long, throbbing moment. "Drover, that's the dumbest thing you said in weeks. In the first place, we've already put out a tracer on the mysterious Esther, and we know she's a spy. In the second place, your phony explanation doesn't account for the stampede that is occurring at this very moment. I'm sorry, Drover, but your can of worms just doesn't cut bait." At that very moment, just as I had disposed of Drover's ridiculous theory, I heard a noise behind me. In one rapid motion, I whirled around and cut loose with a withering barrage of... Slim seemed to be coming out of his coma, the one brought on by a savage blow to his head. That was good news. Great news. By George, I'd been pretty worried about him. I canceled all barks and leaped up on the hay beside his prostrate body and began giving him emergency CPR licks on the face. That brought him around. He pushed me away and said, "Quit." Then he sat up and yawned.
"You bird brains. I come down to the hay barn to take me a little nap. And you show up like ants at a church picnic, barking your fool heads off. You got something against hard hands taking a little siesta?" "Huh?"
I cut my eyes from side to side. okay? Maybe Drover had... If he was going to take a nap, why didn't he just call it a nap? How can a dog run a ranch when people go around speaking in five different languages? Siesta baloney. Suddenly, Slim cocked his ear and listened.
Good honk, dogs. The calves are running.
He grabbed his hat and headed for the corrals. For a moment, Drover and I were alone. I beamed him a glare of purest steel. He gave me his usual silly grin. Drover, sometimes I think you're trying to make a mockery of my position on this ranch.
Yeah, but I figured it out, didn't I?
Even a blind hog finds a piece of baloney once in a while.
What does that mean?
I didn't have time to explain the obvious. I went streaking down to the corrals, where we found... You'd be shocked if I told you we found mysterious Esther, wouldn't you? Well, we didn't. And for the very best of reasons. Obviously, she didn't exist. She'd come straight out of the trash heap of Drover's imagination. No, we didn't find mysterious Esther. We found Slim standing beside the fence, watching 146 head of insane steers and heifers running around the weaning pen. I took up a position right beside him, and together we beamed disgusted looks at the cattle. Stupid calves.
What's got into them now? Uh-oh. Do you see what I'm a-seeing? Stray dogs, Hank. Four of them. And they're chasing our little darlings. I'll go for my shotgun. You whoop the tar out of them.
Yes, sir. And so the adventure began. Slim trotted off to the house. I whirled around and was ready to address Drover when he came limping up. Okay, men, here's the situation. We've got a code 3 out there in the weaning pen. It's liable to be a combat engagement, so lock and load and prepare for the worst. Any questions? Drover raised his paw.
Yeah, this old leg's about to quit me.
That's not a question, trooper. We'll handle complaints after the battle. Any more questions? Drover raised his paw.
Can I go home?
Negative. You'll join me in combat against four stray dogs. His eyes popped open.
Four stray dogs? I thought it was a woman spy. Boy, I sure get confused.
You're right, Drover, but being right for once won't get you out of combat, and neither will being confused. Let's hit the beach and give them the full load of barking. Good luck, men. And with that, we shot under the fence and went streaking out into the weaning pen. I could see them now, four scruffy-looking mutts who drifted out from town and were shopping around for trouble. Well, they'd come to the right place for that. As I drew closer and got a better look at the mutts, I realized that I'd seen them before. It was Buster and Muggs and their gang of town dogs. Remember them? I absorbed this information with mixed emotions, shall we say. On the one hand, I knew they were double tough. On the other hand, I knew that Slim's shotgun was even double tougher. A guy doesn't worry much about the opposition when he's bucked up by backshot. Backed up by buckshot, I should say. And sometimes it even makes him a little, well, cocky, you might say. Confident, braver than normal, secure in his feelings of self-esteem. I headed straight for him and switched on all flashing lights and sirens. Oh, and I also yelled, "Pull over, you creeps. I want to have a word with you, and be quick about it." When they ignored my warnings, I had no choice but to crash into the one in the lead. Buster, as it turned out, the leader of the gang. Boy, you should have seen him. Actually, the crashing into deal had a worse effect on me than on him. He was stouter than you might have thought is the point. And maybe I was the one who got rolled. But he stopped. And so did his boys. And that was the whole point of the exercise, right? Sure it was. I got him shut down. I picked myself up and marched over to him. A glance towards the house told me that Slim was already out on the porch, loading shells into his pump shotgun. That gave me fresh reserves of courage. When I marched up to him, Buster was talking to his pals.
Hey, what was that thing I just ran into? Was it a fly or a gnat?
Muggs, who had the build of a bulldog and the brain of a fence post, was bouncing up and down on his short, thick legs.
Nah, it was the jerk, boss. Right there, see him? He ran into you and I saw it, and I saw the whole thing.
Buster looked me up and down.
Yeah, I think you're right, Muggsy. Say, jerk, when you're out running and playing, you need to be more careful. You could get yourself hurt running into objects made of steel and iron.
Muggs stuck his nose in my face.
Yeah, jerk, and if the boss don't steal your object, I just might have to iron your face. Hur, hur, hur. Did you hear that one, boss, huh? Wasn't that pretty good, huh?
That was very clever, Muggsy. I find myself astonished, as you might say.
Buster's gaze drifted over to me.
So, what kind of foolish impulse brings you into our midst?
Okay, this won't take long. Muggsy was back in my face.
That better not, jerk, because the longer it takes, the shorter you'll be.
I pushed his face away. Would you point that hot air somewhere else? Thanks. Maybe you can kill a few weeds. Buster grinned.
Hey, that ain't bad. Did you hear that, boys? Muggsy might kill some weeds with his breath.
Buster's gaze remained on me.
Go on, hero. I can hardly wait to hear your message. Let me guess. You ain't fond of us chasing your cows, correct?
That's right, only they're not cows, Buster. Cows are adult animals. You're chasing steers and heifers. But I guess that's a little too complicated for you guys. His eyes grew wide.
Ooh, hey, boys. We thought we was chasing cows, but they ain't cows. They're heifs and steroids. So what's the point, country boy? Somehow your cows just started running, and we couldn't figure out why. Could we, boy? So, was we doing something bad? 'Cause if we were, me and my boys might feel terrible about it.
Chasing cattle is against ranch law, Buster. You know that as well as I do.
I do? Then you think we was doing it just for meanness?
He rolled his eyes towards the sky.
I fear my heart will break.
Muggsy jumped back into the conversation.
Yeah, jerk. And then I fear we'll have to broke your face. And after we broke your face, we'll broke your nose off too, won't we, boss?
Shut up, Muggs. I appreciate your interest, but let him talk.
Thanks. You have 2 minutes to get off my ranch.
Wow. 2 minutes? That ain't much time. And me and the boys was having fun. And maybe we can't make it, see? So, I wonder what might happen.
I gave them an easy smile. You guys ever go up against a shotgun?
Yeah, lots of times. It ain't fun. But you know what?
He drilled me in the chest with his paw.
You ain't got one, jerk. That could be a problem. I mean, with you mouthing off and everything.
Muggs was back.
Yeah, jerk. And if you don't mouth stopping off, I'm gonna... If you don't get that shotgun out of your mouth... If you don't...
Buster stopped him with a raised paw.
Think about it, Mugsy. It'll come back to you in a minute. Back to me. Me and my boys observed that you ain't got a shotgun, pal.
I swallowed hard. What the heck was Slim doing? It's up on the porch, Buster, and it'll be here any minute now. That's Slim, and he's doubling all the charges.
Is he? But the problem is that he ain't here. And you are. And he ain't mouthing off to me and my boys. And you are. Do you see what this means?
Buster, you don't really think I'd be stupid enough to walk into the middle of you guys without a secret weapon, do you?
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think you're that dumb. And I thought so the minute I laid eyes on you. Somehow you just look dumb.
What if I told you that I've got a whole division of Rottweilers hiding over in those chinaberry trees, just waiting for my signal to attack?
Well, naturally, I'd think you was lying.
Okay, guys, it's time for me to reveal that you've walked right into my trap. Buster grinned.
Oh, gosh, we have walked into his trap. What shall we do?
Mugsy popped up.
Hey, boss, we could always run.
We ain't gonna run, 'cause he ain't got a trap. He's all mouth and no brains, Mugsy. And in that respect, he reminds me of you.
I stiffened my back and tried to hide the quiver in my voice. I'll give it to the count of three. At that point, we'll find out who's bluffing. Buster nodded his head.
Yeah, we will. Only I already know.
One. I went to full flames on all engines and made a wild dash for the house. Sure, I knew it wasn't dignified for the head of ranch security to be chased up on his own porch, but at that moment, I didn't care much about appearances and so forth. You'll be proud to know that I made it. I flew up on the porch, skidded to a stop, and took refuge. That is, I established a new command post behind... Okay, I hid behind Slim's legs, but... The important thing is that I began firing off barks immediately, and I mean big barks, huge barks, barks that would have scared the liver out of a liverwurst sandwich. Boy, you should have seen me. First, I fired off two barks around Slim's left leg, then shifted sides to confuse him, don't you know, and fired off two more barks around his right leg. Pretty impressive, huh? You bet it was. And then, this will impress you even more. I poked my head between his legs and showered those hoodlums with a burst of fully automatic barking. It stopped them in their tracks. I mean, those guys were so shocked and terrified, they turned and ran like the cowards they really were. Okay, maybe it helped that Slim finally got his shotgun loaded and sent a full chorus of buckshots singing over their heads. But mainly it was my counteroffensive of deep, manly barking that turned the tide of battle in our favor. As the cowards vanished into the distance, I crept out of my bunker position and went charging after them. I went all the way to the edge of the porch, if you can believe that. Let that be a lesson to you, you meanies. And don't forget that your mamas are twice as ugly as you are. Boy, I got them told, huh? You bet I did. I had a feeling that we'd never see those guys again. After I'd sent the rascals fleeing for their lives, I turned a sour gaze on Slim. He grinned and shrugged. Darn gun jammed on me. Great, swell. But wasn't there a new miracle invention called gun oil? I mean, some guys actually oiled their shotguns once or twice a year. And guess what? Their shotguns didn't jam. And their dogs didn't get chased up on porches either. Oh, well, we'd won a huge moral victory over the stray dogs, and I had saved the calves from being stampeded all over the county. And maybe I could find it in my heart to forgive Slim for being, whatever he was, lazy, I guess, and just a little careless with the head of ranch security. Perhaps you're wondering what became of Drover and all the excitement. I wondered about that myself, and it took me half an hour to solve the mystery. Actually, it was no mystery at all. It was the biggest non-surprise of the year. In the heat of battle, he had run back to the hay barn and had squeezed himself in between two bales of hay. I discovered his hiney sticking out. We needn't report the full extent of the tongue lashing I gave him. It was pretty severe, but he promised never to do it again. And this time, I got the feeling that he really meant it. And with that, we retired to the house. And yes, to the warmth and comfort of Slim's wood-burning stove. Let me say right here that I don't totally approve of ranch dogs sleeping inside a house. Have I mentioned that before? Maybe not, but it's true. Too much warmth and comfort can corrupt a ranch dog. I don't worry about myself, but I worry a lot about Drover. I've noticed that he is easily corrupted by luxuries, such as sleeping inside Slim's house. Okay, maybe I sort of enjoy it too, but at least I feel guilty about it. Show me a dog who feels no guilt about sleeping inside a house, and I'll show you a dog who's on the road to ruin. Road to ruin, I should say. I'll show you a dog who's being slowly strangled by the velvet glove of luxury. It's a terrible thing to see. Drover curled up on a spot near the stove, and within seconds he was totally knocked out, sleeping and making his usual orchestra of weird sounds, such as wheezing and grunting. Me, I couldn't sleep. Not only was I being distracted by Drover's noises, but I also began to notice that the floor was getting hard. I moved around and tried to find a comfortable spot, but nothing seemed to help. At last, I heaved a weary sigh, jacked myself up off the floor, and began a routine which we call digging and fluffing. See, a lot of times when your bed's too hard, you can work it around and soften it up. First, we dig up the sleeping area with our front paws. Then, second, we circle the softened spot three or four times before collapsing. Anyways, I began the digging and fluffing routine, and I knew right away that this was not going to be an easy assignment. Slim's hardwood floors were covered with carpet, but it was old and thin. I dug and dug and dug. Slim must have heard the sound of my claws scraping across his so-called carpet because his eyes came up from the livestock paper he was reading. Hank, if I'd wanted a basement to this house, I would have dug it myself. I stopped digging and stared at him. Basement? I wasn't digging a basement. I was merely trying to find a small, comfortable spot on his... Oh, maybe... He was trying to be funny. Cowboy humor. They say one thing and mean something else. Okay, digging a basement. Very funny. I went back to my digging. He reached out his bare foot and kicked me on the tail section. Kind of gave me a jolt. I mean, I was in very deep concentration and quit tearing up my carpet. I paid $14 for that thing at a garage sale, and I don't need you digging holes in it. It ain't much, but it's better than you deserve. Okay, fine. If that's the way he felt about it, I would just... I didn't know what I was going to do. Sit up all night. Suffer. Deprive myself of much-needed sleep. Just then, the silence was slashed by a loud, piercing sound. I didn't know what it was, but I leaped away from it and began barking. At first, it sounded like, well, the ringing of some kind of bell or buzzer, perhaps an early warning alarm. And when we dogs get an early warning alarm, our first and most important response is to bark. I barked. And since I wasn't sure where the sound was coming from, I delivered several bursts of spray barking and covered the entire north half of the... Okay, relax. It was just the ringing of the telephone. Slim answered it.
Hello? Yes? Not yet. It ain't 9 o'clock. Uh-huh. Reading my livestock paper and babysitting a couple of Sioux pounds. Who is this?
Suddenly, he sat up straight and his eyes popped open.
Viola, I'll be darned. How have you been? Haven't seen you in quite a spell. How's your grass down your way? Uh-huh. Same here. Cows are doing good.
I waited to hear something important. I mean, I'm a fairly busy dog, and I usually have more important things to do than listen to Slim's grass report. My mind began to wander, is the point, and I found myself thinking of other matters. I noticed, for example, the pile of newspapers on the floor near Slim's bare feet, and it occurred to me that those papers would make good bedding if a guy just took the time to work them around. I advanced towards the papers and shifted into digging and fluffing. Now, this was more like it. Instead of digging into a threadbare carpet, I had something with body and soul and substance. I dug and I dug. And you know, it was kind of satisfying stirring up all those newspapers. Here was something worth digging, and I could hardly wait to shift into the next two steps of the procedure. Fluff and circle the bed. I threw myself into the digging. By George, this was fun! It had been months since I had dug into a pile of newspapers this deep. I had them flying in all directions and was about to shift into the fluffing procedure when I felt Slim's foot poke me in the ribs. He covered the phone with his hand and gave me a hard glare.
Quit digging up my library, you dingbat. I have them papers filed just the way I want them. And I may want to go back and clip out some articles. You're making a mess of my house.
I stared at him in disbelief. I was... Oh, boy. That was the joke of the century. Me making a mess of his house? Ha! His house was a slum area, and I'd had nothing to do with it. He went back to his conversation.
Huh? No. I was talking to Hank. I think he wants to be a badger when he grows up. He's been trying to dig up my house all evening.
Well, there was another insult. For his information, I did not want to be a badger. I was perfectly content being a dog, thank you, but finding a comfortable place to relax in his house just happened to be no can of wax. Okay, I stopped digging in his so-called library and moved rapidly into the fluffing procedure. With a little luck, I might have a decent place to sleep before midnight. I did some fluffing, then went right into circle the bed. I circled it 3 times, just the way it's supposed to be done, and then I plopped...
Yow!
For Pete's sakes, what was that thing I'd plopped down on? It felt like a rock, maybe even a boulder. And what was a boulder doing in the middle of Slim's living room? I raised myself to a standing position and began sniffing through the pile of papers, and even went to the trouble of activating smell-o-radar. A lot of dogs wouldn't have gone to that much trouble, but I did, for the simple reason that I wasn't too keen on the idea of sleeping on a rock pile. Yes, I did have hopes of getting a little sleep if I could clear away all the rubble and get Slim off the phone. I had a boulder lurking in my bed and I had to find it. I activated smell-o-radar and set it for rock search. Nothing. A total blank for rocks and boulders. But then, I began picking up faint signals that suggested the presence of bone? Impossible. I punched in deep sniff and did a more thorough analysis. By George, All the instruments kept bringing up the same results. Bone, grade 3, fairly old, possibly steak. Well, a guy has to trust his instruments, so I probed deeper into the paper mess with my nose and, I'll be darned, found a bone at the bottom of the heap. My first thought was that some stranger had wandered into Slim's shack, gotten lost in all the papers and mess, and perished, leaving a few bones behind. But no, on second thought, that theory didn't make sense. Nobody in his right mind would wander into Slim's dirty house. But what was a bone doing there in the middle of the living room? I eased my jaws around the bone and lifted it out of the paper mess, laid it on the floor, and studied it with eyes that were well-trained in the field of bonology. The results were shocking. Not only was this not a steak bone, it wasn't even a beef bone. It was a turkey neck bone. What was a turkey neck bone doing in the middle of Slim's living room floor? I had no idea. All I can tell you is that many strange things end up on his floor. Well, I felt pretty proud of myself for solving the mystery of the turkey neck bone. And it occurred to me that maybe I should celebrate my success by chewing it. That's just what I did. I had just taken it into my mouth and begun to enjoy the nice, crunchy texture of this particular bone and had lost all interest in Slim's phone conversation with Miss Viola when, suddenly, he hung up the phone and leaped to his feet. I stared at him in shock and surprise. I mean, Slim wasn't much inclined to make sudden movements of any kind. Leaping out of a chair was something you might expect him to do if the house was on fire and burning boards were falling all around him. But here and now, I noticed that his eyes were wide with something. Fear? Terror? Something bad had happened. Something was terribly wrong. The bone rolled out of my mouth, and I went straight into heavy-duty barking.
Good honk. Viola's folks are out of coffee. She's coming over here to borrow some. She'll be here in 30 minutes, and this house looks like a train wreck. And Hank, shut up your barking. Huh? Okay, sure, fine. I could shut up my barking. I'd just been trying. I mean, he'd been the one who'd float out of the chair, right?
Leaped. He'd been the one who'd leaped out of the chair, right? When people start leaping out of chairs and windows, screeching and rolling their eyes, we dogs are trained to bark. But he didn't want his house to be protected and alerted by a highly trained, highly decorated head of ranch security. That was just fine with me. I had better things to do than bark, such as crunching that turkey neck bone. Now, where was that bone? I poked my nose into the pile of papers and was in the process of,
out of the way, dogs. We've got to get this place cleaned up.
Here he came, lumbering and thundering right over the top of me. Fortunately, I saw him coming and was able to scramble out of the way. His big bare foot missed smashing my nose by a matter of inches. Too bad his big bare foot didn't miss the bone. Let's get something straight right here. I refuse to take responsibility for what happened next. Remember, I was just minding my own business. Remember also that the bone had been in that same room, on that same floor, in that same mess of papers for months. Okay, maybe my chewing had sharpened some of the ends and edges, but don't forget that turkey neck bones, even those that haven't been chewed, are pretty jagged. Nothing you'd want to pounce on with a bare foot. That's what he did. He pounced on the bone, the jagged, sharp turkey vertebrae, with his bare foot. And that began a very strange chain of events. As near as I can figure, he stepped on the bone pretty hard, which probably hurt. Of course it did, which explains his howl of pain.
Ow!
But that wasn't the worst part. He also twisted his ankle and went crashing to the floor. The crash brought Drover out of his stuporous state. He leaped to his feet, staggered around, and began squeaking.
Help! Murder! Mayday! The pork chops are coming! Oh, my leg!
In a flash, he was gone. I heard his claws scratching on the floor as he crawled beneath the bed in the back room. Slim grabbed his ankle, his own ankle, not Drover's, and let out a groan. I rushed to his side and began administering emergency licks to his face and ear. For the second time that evening, I might add. I mean, this was clearly a serious situation, him falling to the floor, and I was willing to forget his hateful remarks about my barking and put the past behind us. Do you suppose he was grateful? Oh, no. He turned to me with wild eyes and clenched teeth and screeched, "Get away from me, you meathead. I think I broke my ankle." Fine. By George, if he thought he could cure his broken ankle without emergency licks, that was sure okay with me. I was just trying to help. Sometimes I wonder what it takes to please these people. I retired to the northeast corner of the room, sat down, and began beaming him hurtful looks and brooding glares. He clenched his teeth against the pain and struggled to his feet, using a chair for support. He tested the ankle several times before putting his weight on it, and that brought another grimace of pain. Then he tried walking on it, or hopping might be a better word for it, because he sure was packing it around. But he managed to walk a few steps before he hoisted her up and stopped for a rest. Well, I don't think she's busted. I hope not, because a broken leg don't fit into my plans right now. Was he talking to me? Too bad, because I wasn't listening. I no longer cared, and to prove it, I turned my eyes away from him. I mean, we dogs are very sensitive animals. We can be screeched at and yelled at so many times, and then something terrible happens to our... whatever. He limped a few more steps. I guess it'll be all right. I wonder what that thing was I stepped on. My ears jumped. My gaze slid over in his direction. Stepped on? Had he stepped on something? I had no idea what it might have been. Probably some irregularity in the floorboarding. The floor was pretty old. He hopped and limped over to the scene of the accident and peered down into the jumble of papers and so forth. His brows jumped. Uh-oh. He reached down with his hand and came up holding holding some sort of white, irregular-shaped object. Perhaps a bone. He turned it around in his fingers. Then I felt his gaze moving across the room and, well, searching for me, perhaps. Although, his eyes locked on me. I found it hard to meet his gaze, so to speak, and began studying the holes, nails, and paint splatters on the north wall. Hank. I jumped at the sound of his voice. What is this? I turned my eyes in his direction. I was feeling very uncomfortable about this. He was holding something in his fingers, it appeared. What is this? I thumped my tail on the floor and squeezed up my most sincere smile. His eyes came at me like drill bits. I could feel them drilling holes in me. Where'd this turkey bone come from? Turkey bone? Oh, yes, the thing in his fingers. Well, turkey bones came from turkeys, so to speak, and Maybe a lost turkey had wandered into the house and couldn't find its way out and just died. Yes, that was it. The turkey had died in the house and its bones had gotten scattered to the four winds, as they say, and one of the neck bones had, well, suddenly turned up on the living room floor. But the important point was that it had been pretty much a natural occurrence, and we dogs knew nothing about it. Almost nothing at all. No kidding. I swept my tail across the threadbare carpet floor and concentrated extra hard on putting sincerity into my expression.
You bozo. You were chewing a turkey bone in my living room, weren't you?
Well, I stepped on it and almost broke my leg. Well, you see, oh boy, all at once I felt that the facts had overwhelmed my ability to explain them. I switched over to slow, mournful wags on the tail section and gave him my most sincere look of tragedy. Okay, yes, the cat was out of the sandbag. I could no longer deny the awful truth. I stood before him, accused and convicted of terrible crimes, and now all that was left for me was to throw myself at his feet and hope for mercy. I lowered my head and assumed the pose of a beaten dog, a humbled dog, a dog who had fallen to the very depths of despair and heartbreak, who had hoped and wanted all his life to be a good dog, but who was now feeling the terrible stinging lash of conscience. I lowered myself to the very depths of the floor and crawled, yes, crawled, to his towering angry presence and licked his big toe. Sometimes that works, you know. He continued to glare down at me, but I noticed a few cracks in his icy expression. Maybe it was working. I rolled my eyes up to him and wiggled the very tip end of my tail. Yes, the ice was melting. The stone was showing a few cracks. He shook his head and compressed his lips.
Hank, you're such a bird brain. You're just dumb. Do you know that?
Well, I wasn't in a position to argue that.
You're dumb, and you're pretty close to worthless. And I could have broke my neck as well as my leg on your dadgum turkey bone.
He sighed and glanced around the room.
But I didn't, so I guess I'll start cleaning up this good honk. This place looks awful.
There it was. I was saved. Oh, happy day. I went to joyous bounds and leaps, wrapped my front paws around his leg, and gave him a big hug. He reached down and scratched me behind the ears.
I get myself into the darndest messes, and I don't know whether it's because I'm too nice or too dumb. Probably dumb. I remember now how the turkey bone got in here. I bought that 10-pound package of turkey necks on sale and ate boiled necks for 2 weeks, and I was chewing on a bone one night and forgot to throw it in the trash. Sorry, Hanky. I got what I deserved. You're cleared of all charges.
See? Didn't I tell you? But the important thing was that we were friends again. Now all we had to do was get his house shaped up. At first he just wandered from room to room like a lost child, muttering and shaking his head. Like a good loyal dog, I followed him every step of the way. If I couldn't actually help him with the cleaning, at least I could be with him in his hour of greatest need and show him, through wags and solemn expressions, that I shared his pain and felt his sorrow. The sharing of pain has always been a very important part of a cowdog's job. Even dogs who do poorly in other departments can keep their jobs by scoring well in the sharing of pain. Where do I start? With a match and a can of gasoline? Why did I answer that phone? He took a big gulp of air and plunged into the work. He attacked the newspapers first, scooping them up with both hands and stuffing them into grocery sacks. After he'd filled five sacks, we began to see that there was a floor and a carpet on the next level. Well, that was progress. The job didn't seem as hopeless as it had before. Slim's mood began to improve, and the dark shadows that had covered his face went away. Before long, he was even whistling. At that point, we could see the entire floor of the living room, which was quite an accomplishment. The only problem was that the floor and the carpet needed to be swept. Even I could see that. I mean, we're talking about sand, gravel, dirt, pieces of grass and hay, and even a few muddy tracks that might have been there for years. Slim got his broom and made a few swipes with it, but his heart wasn't in it. Then his eyes brightened. Say, I've got an old vacuum sweeper in the hall closet. Sally Mae gave it to me a year ago, and I forgot all about it. Stand by for action, Hanky. I'm going for the sweeper. He ran for the sweeper, dragged it out, and plugged it in. All at once, the house was filled with the sounds of its screaming motor. Kind of noisy, ain't it? Yes, it certainly was, and it hurt my ears so much that I found it necessary to turn my back on the awful thing. That was a mistake. I should have known better. Never turn your back on a cowboy who's armed with a vacuum sweeper. You know what he did? I was shocked. I mean, there we were in the midst of an emergency cleanup, right? Miss Viola was due to arrive in 20 minutes, and Slim didn't want her to see what a filthy pit he lived in, right? In other words, even if we worked like demons and never looked up, we had our hands cut out for us, right? So what did Slim do? You won't believe this. See, I was just sitting there, looking the other direction, minding my own business, trying to ignore the whining scream of the sweeper, when all of a sudden,
yikes!
Some mysterious something got a hold of my tail and began. It was a very strange sensation, and I mean very strange. It didn't exactly hurt, but it scared the bejeebers out of me. I mean, all at once I felt that my tail was being pulled by some kind of wind or magnetic force into a, I don't know, into a black hole or a whirlpool. Well, you know me. When confronted with something strange and terrifying, I don't just sit there. I bark. Yes, sir, I bark and whirled and leaped into the air and looked straight into Slim's grinning face. I mean, he was grinning like some kind of devil monster, a childish devil monster. And would you care to guess what he was grinning about? I should have known he couldn't stick with a job for more than 30 seconds. That his idle, childish cowboy mind, just skip it. I'm not going to tell you the rest of it.